Hello, everyone, and welcome to Four Panel, the Geek Show's dedicated comics and manga podcast. I'm your host, Andrew, and as per usual, I'm joined by my co-host, Rob.
Hello.
And Mick.
Hello.
So, how are we doing today, guys?
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. It's the best feeling in the world.
Yeah, Mick's having a great feeling because...
We played lots of good footballs.
Yes, you did play lots of good footballs. There were a lot of balls that were kicked and there were lots of goals that were scored and you ended up as champions of the championship. Which
which makes us champions squared, I believe.
I mean, it is a bizarre thing to say they're champions of the championship.
The weird thing is, right, we haven't played a game since Thursday night.
Yeah.
And when football finished on Thursday night... We needed 1 point to be promoted and 4 points to be champions from two remaining games. And then because of the way results have panned out everywhere else, we don't need those. We've got two games to play that we can just go out and enjoy the party.
I just have one small question, and this has confused me for a long time. Ever since they decided to call it the championship, how can you be promoted from being champion? That doesn't make sense.
Because now we become premiers.
Look, we ran out of comics, okay? We've got to fill the runtime.
All of this is leading up to us talking about Judge Dredd.
No, it isn't, Rob. Don't try and trick the audience like that. They've been here long enough to know. This has absolutely nothing to do with us talking about Judge Dredd.
No, there is a link.
This is completely unrelated preamble.
No, there is a link.
This is not completely unrelated preamble because my segue was going to be Leeds have won the championship, which makes Leeds Mega City 1.
I was about to say, Judge Dredd, when you get right down to it, is a very northern comic. It is.
Actually, can we stick with it being unrelated preamble? Because I think that's the better option than those segues.
All right. We've been busted, Mick. Let's go and talk about Judge Dredd. Your other love, I might add.
One of my other loves, yes.
Does your wife know about this? About your long-term affair with Judge Dredd?
Yeah, she's not bothered about that. It's the one with Judge Anderson she's concerned about.
Ah, right.
Anyway, yes, today we are doing another one of our kind of comic book reading guides, this time for, I mean, probably like the biggest UK comics character, Judge Dredd.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Dodgy Stallone movies aside.
Oh, you had to remind us, didn't you?
Yeah, I had to remind you of Stallone's little foray into... I noticed that even though... He took his helmet off in the movie, which he never takes his helmet off. You know that song, You Can Leave Your Hat On? That's like, you know, there's a very end of that. That might be Judge.
That's Judge Dredd's theme tune, really. You can leave your, well, it's more like you must leave your hat on.
Yeah, you must leave your helmet on.
You are legally obligated to leave your hat on.
Exactly.
Failure to comply will result in 12 months in ISO.
Yeah.
Yes. I noticed in the comics... There was a half-hearted attempt to kind of draw Judge Dredd's face, and then it stopped very quickly.
Yeah.
And those comics were kind of disregarded as, they're not part of Judge Dredd. We ignore them.
No, there is a strand which dates back to the days of the Judge Dredd magazine, I think, called The Dead Man.
Yeah.
Where it's... Dredd in the wastelands, but he's been burnt. He almost looks like Wade Wilson does without the Deadpool mask.
Yeah.
So that's about as close as you ever get to a proper understanding of the man behind the mask.
This was before Necropolis, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll get to that, though. So, Mick,
yeah.
You are our guiding light on this, I think.
Yes, as the one member of the crew who's old enough to remember 2000 AD.
Hey, You're not the only one old enough to remember 2000 AD.
Prog 1.
Oh, Prog 1. Okay, yeah.
You see,
I mean, I'm barely old enough to remember the year 2000.
All I'm saying is I grew up reading Eagle in 2000 AD as well.
Yeah, but what you've got to remember is I remember Eagle from the first time round.
Yeah, this is true.
So yeah, so for those of you who've been, I don't know, hiding under a rock for the last 40 years, Judge Dredd is the lawman of Mega City 1 and found fame in the pages of 2000 AD, which was a revolutionary British comic from the late 70s. Judge Dredd is, I think it's fair to say, not a hero.
No,
or certainly not at the beginning.
He is the law. That's it. He is the law. And the law is neither hero nor villain.
Yeah. So just to do a bit of world building, Judge Dredd inhabits Mega City 1, which is one of probably about a dozen huge conurbations spread across the world. The political landscape is fractured. You've got some very sort of prominent, you've got the United States, which has got effectively three main cities. You've got Texas, Mega City 1 and Mega City 2. Britain is forging its own path and has Britsit.
Which still, it still sounds like you need a high-fiber diet, no matter how many times you say it.
It also sounds eerily prescient.
Yeah.
It does, yeah. I mean, bearing in mind that we'd only been a member of the EU for about 4 years before the first episode of Judge Dredd came out.
Yeah. Weirdly enough, Judge Dredd is kind of almost as prescient as The Simpsons when it comes to foretelling the future.
It is.
I would even argue more so. Because for like The Simpsons, it's just there's so much Simpsons on a variety of topics. It's just inevitable that sometimes it'll be right.
Yeah.
Which in the same way, like, you know, a broken clock is right twice a day. But
yeah.
Judge Dredd, I definitely like, is actually very good at kind of predicting trends. And but also, I feel like maybe the even less charitable approach is that maybe it's just that there's lots of problems with systemic government that have been present since the 80s and we've still not actually dealt with them.
That's also true.
Yeah.
So yeah, so there's Russia, of course, has got its own Eastern Bloc powerhouse, which is East Meg 1 or East Meg 2. Well, that is until the events of the Apocalypse War.
Yeah.
And it's all for anyone who's not familiar with the world, effectively they all live in these massive walled cities because there has been a nuclear war, and most of the intervening tracts of land between cities is a rubble-strewn, radioactive, mutant-producing wasteland where your life expectancy could be measured on a second hand in most cases.
Unless your name is Max and you are slightly insane.
Well, that's a different franchise, to be fair.
Yeah. No, I was just making a point.
But, yeah, it's that kind of... it's the kind of world that found a lot of popularity in sort of the late 70s, early 80s, but is actually the staple of British sci-fi. British sci-fi tends to be dystopian.
Yeah.
And yeah. Judge Dredd is the custodian of the law in Mega City 1. And in the early strips, he's not a very nice man.
No, he's not. He...
I mean George Orwell, the character O'Brien,
yeah.
When he's talking to Winston Smith in 1984, describes, if you want to know what the future looks like, imagine the shape of a human boot standing down on a human face forever. I suspect Judge Dredd was wearing the boot.
Yeah. I suspect it was, the print left actually just said Dredd.
Yeah.
The weird thing is, though, as much as you kind of... Dredd is one of those characters where you love to love him, but you also love to hate him as well. And if you had to name a comic book character out of all of them who doesn't have superpowers, but who had your back in a fight, he'd be in the top three.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I would argue that Judge Dredd does not qualify as a superhero without superpowers. Because he's not a normal man, is he?
Well,
he's a gigantic slab of meat in a helmet.
That is true. And is, of course, a clone.
Yeah. Okay. But aside from those two things, I mean, I think it was Judgment on Gotham which highlighted the kind of similarities and differences between Batman and Judge Dredd.
Well, the cape for a start.
Yeah, the cape for a start. But when Anderson examines Batman, I mean, it's a good lead-in, this one, to what we're talking about, I suppose, because Batman's such a familiar character.
Yeah.
And Judgment on Gotham, I think, aside from the wonderful...
Right, well, I think, you know, first of all, we should probably point out Judge Dredd, created by John Wagner, Carlos Esquerra, and Pat Mills.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, duty is done.
And they're also, like, most of the creative teams for the stories we're talking about.
Yes. Can we talk about the comics now?
Nah.
Aww. I was all geared up to talk about Judgment on Gotham because I love it. tell me Judgment on Gotham isn't all kinds of amazing.
Oh, no, it's all kinds of amazing. In a way that a lot of those independent crossover comics of the 90s weren't.
Yeah. The artwork, for a start. Just how gorgeous was the artwork?
Simon Bisley did the art on that series. And yeah, it's really bizarre. I think, like, quite surreal. Very exaggerated. Like, I love the way the Batmobile and that just has these gigantic... I mean, it basically has just wings on the back of it.
It was kind of riffing off the Tim Burton Batmobile. There's this scene that always sticks in my mind. It's the one where Batman is in Mega City 1 and Anderson is doing a dive on his brain. And just that thing spirals up out of his brain with the Joker and the Riddler and Penguin. And she goes, he knows some weird people. Which is like, it's like the understatement of the century that Batman knows some weird people. But that whole cloud of images that pops out of Batman's head that Anderson sees was just like, it was one of the best pieces of comic book art. I want that as a poster still.
Yeah.
But yeah, but I think it is, like you said, Rob, that series, also again, written by John Wagner and Alan Grant.
Yeah.
I think Alan Grant is kind of one of the other big names in Judge Dredd, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, but that series, it does a very good job kind of comparing and contrasting Judge Dredd and Batman. And it kind of really shows you Judge Dredd, he is not a superhero.
Yeah.
He is a guy who is here to uphold the law. And if that means, like, allowing an entire other city to get wiped out, well, that's what the law is, baby.
Yeah.
The thing is, because that was so successful, they went on with a couple of other Dredd Batman crossovers, which were nowhere near as much fun.
Oh no, it was definitely a case of diminishing returns the longer that series went on.
Yeah.
But the initial,
the first one, Judge Death appearing at a rock concert.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, the whole of Judge Dredd, it looks like a massive rock convention, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That's the thing.
As a preliminary story, I think anyone who kind of wants to kind of dip the toe into Judge Dredd, I think Judgment on Gotham is a good place to start.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's also good because it introduces the two best Judge Dredd villains, Judge Death and Mean Machine Angel.
Exactly.
Yes.
So I think we should probably describe it. Mean Machine Angel is great because he's a giant cyborg hillbilly. And he's got a dial, with a dial going from 1 to 4 on the top of his head.
Yeah.
Which dictates how hard his headbutts are.
And what I love about it is that sometimes he forgets to change it, but sometimes it gets changed by accident because a stray bullet ricochets and knocks the arrow.
I can't remember which issue it was in, but it's probably something that's happened many times over with Mean Machine Angel, where something has kind of accidentally knocked his dial. And he's been stuck in headbutt mode, so he can't do anything else.
Yeah, I think that was that part of the Judge Child?
Actually, it might have been.
Which was like the original story he was in.
Yeah, I think it might have been in that.
And that was a weird story.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was. I feel like Judge Child is one of those ones that tends to make these kind of best Judge Dredd stories lists, I think, because it was like one of the first big mega epics and because it introduced me Machine Angel. But I'd say the story itself kind of isn't that great. Like, it's all right. I mean, it's just... Yeah. I wouldn't necessarily call it one of the greatest Judge Dredd stories ever told.
Yeah, I do have to kind of agree with you on that one. If you've not read any other Judge Dredd stories, then it is really good. But if you stand it up against other stories like Democracy and Total War, and obviously there's... what was it? You know the one where they fought the Russians? What
was that? Yeah, that's the Apocalypse War.
Apocalypse War, that was it. Sorry, not Total War, Apocalypse War. Total War was something else, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think that's the one that's at the end of Democracy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, Apocalypse War and Democracy. If you stand it up against the likes of those where they're long running, but there's all sorts of things happening and there's a lot to kind of keep track of in those stories, up against those, it kind of pales in comparison.
Yeah. It also pales in comparison, as all human beings do, to Judge Death.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who is the best Judge Dredd character.
And also voted number 3 in the best story ever printed in the Dredd comics in a 2005 poll in 2080.
Well, there you go. But yeah, Judge Death is really cool. He's like this very thin, gaunt, I'd say. I want to say skeletal, but I guess he's more like kind of a rotting cadaver, isn't he?
With a face that looks a bit like the face of a predator when he's got his helmet on. Sorry, not a predator, an alien. You know, the xenomorph?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah, with his big kind of toothy mouth.
Yeah, and it looks a bit like the kind of front face of a xenomorph, doesn't it? The rest of him doesn't, just like the face.
Yeah, also, I love how his costume's kind of like this weird, sort of dark, but also incredibly over-the-top parody of Judge Dredd's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, his visor's just a great... And he's got a big, like, bony shoulder pad and then some weird... I mean, I think it was only Judgment in Gotham. I realized it's supposed to be a pterodactyl on his other shoulder.
Yeah. There are no pterodactyls in Gotham.
Yes. That's another thing I like about Judgment in Gotham and why I think it's a great Judge Dredd story is I think it also introduces you to a point that I think a lot of people who aren't that... don't know that much about the character, but I don't realise, is that Judge Dredd stories can also be very silly indeed.
Yes.
Oh, hell yes. And one of the things I like about, the world that Judge Dredd inhabits, and because over the years you've gone to Sino City, which is the Japanese thing, and Hondo City, Sino City is the Chinese equivalent, and Hondo City is the Japanese equivalent. There's even we were talking about how it was kind of prescient. There's even a Scottish megacity that's separate from Britsit.
Sorry, I just can't help but chuckle whenever you say Britsit.
What I think is, if someone had the wherewithal to do it, you could have, from this tiny British comic that cost like 12p in 1978, from just one strip in it. And you've got to remember, it wasn't even in issue 1 of 2000 AD. Judge Dredd didn't debut until the second issue.
Yeah.
From this one strip, which might have been 4 or 5 pages out of a 32-page comic, you could do a huge cinematic universe.
Yeah.
Well, you could have a TV series that follows the Simp Squad.
Yeah.
You could follow the adventures of the Psy Judges.
Yeah. I think in order to kind of highlight that, some other stories then from the recommended reading list.
Yeah, we certainly can. I am just really amused though by the idea of like a super dark and gritty like Judge Dredd trilogy and then coming soon to Disney Plus, Walter the Wobot.
Yes.
who is a much ignored character by his master.
Yes. So back to the reading list then. We've mentioned Democracy probably a good place to start, would you say?
In the sense that yes, because you're talking about like half of Judge Dredd.
Well, I'm just saying it's an election year in America, so.
And how does that link into democracy? Oh, a little bit of satire there.
So yeah,
and it's one of the things that I love about Judge Dredd is because you can have single issue, almost irrelevant stories where it's just about crime of the week.
Yeah,
and then you can have these sprawling epics that last years, and they fade into the background like a good arc plot on a TV show.
With democracy, it wasn't one story that made up democracy. Well, it was several stories that made up democracy and can't be called democracy later. Because you had the Letter from a Democrat, which is the martyrdom of Hester Hyman. And then you had the Democratic March, which really played into this whole thing about Judge Dredd. Didn't Alan Grant and what's-his-face? I've forgotten the other guy's name. The other creator.
What's-his-face? Do you mean John Wagner, creator and most influential writer on Judge Dredd?
Yeah, John Wagner. Yeah. I forgot his name, okay. But didn't Alan Grant and John Wagner have a bit of a falling out because of the Democratic March? Or kind of after? Because I think it was that Wagner wanted Dredd to be a bit more human and Grant wanted to push it more towards like total satire where he's like completely authoritarian and, you know, a complete fascist.
Yeah, and these differences came to light whilst they were writing Democracy, but it was actually a non-democracy storyline that brought it all to a head. It was actually Oz where they parted ways.
Yeah. I mean, one of the ones from your reading list that kind of got me was A Letter to Judge Dredd.
Mm-hmm.
That one was powerful, even though it was so short.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like I should probably take a step back and say that the point with Democracy is like it is this big sprawling story arc about the idea of Mega City One being this kind of fascist totalitarian state. And so that there's like a rise in a movement that wants to change the government to something more democratic.
Hmm.
And it's generally about Judge Dredd having to confront, you know, the fact that he is a bit of a bad bloke, like he is just a tool of the state, and that sometimes like the law and what's right are actually two completely different things. Yeah. I think, is that kind of a fair overview?
Yeah, I mean, that was highlighted in the Democratic March because he got told to do things that weren't exactly legal.
This is kind of why I chose Democracy and to a lesser degree America.
Yeah.
Because I think the one thing that you can say about Judge Dredd over his 40-year history, that to a degree, it's happened to Batman over 80 years, but I don't think fundamentally as a character, he's evolved that much.
No, he hasn't.
No. The times he lives in, the styling of Gotham around him has maybe changed, and maybe the stories that are told about him, but fundamentally the character is different. Judge Dredd now, I think you can call a hero, flawed hero, a seriously flawed hero. But the Judge Dredd from issue 2 of 2000 AD, no.
Yeah, I mean, the early Judge Dredd is more machine than man, isn't he? He's more a tool of the system.
It's more than a passing resemblance to RoboCop, really.
Yeah, but the Judge Dredd now is much more of a human character. The interesting thing is, when they did the Batman arc, the Nightfall arc, where his back gets broken by Bane, they had a perfect opportunity to evolve Bruce Wayne Batman into something new, right?
Yeah.
And they basically did nothing with it.
Well, I think the point, though, is that with something like Batman, it's not a continuous story. It's like it's going to be one of those things that always goes in these cycles.
Yeah.
Whereas Judge Dredd, because like John Wagner has been there pretty much continuously since day one.
Yeah.
It has been this like growing and evolving story. I don't know, that's like the thing that always impressed me when I was reading it, is the idea that you could have a story where something big happens, and then the repercussions of that. That would be like years and years worth of stories.
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
And it's a trick that Judge Dredd pulls off time and time and time again.
Yeah, I mean, the whole fallout from the Democracy follows the Dredd storyline all the way through, like Tale of the Dead Man, and all the way through Necropolis as well, doesn't it?
So you've got a major storyline that like Necropolis, which, you know, lasts for a long, 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 long time, but yeah, it's dealing with fallout from earlier stories in Democracy, and also setting the seeds for fallout to come in other stories.
Yeah.
It's very rare that you come across an issue where you're reading something and suddenly it contradicts something that was important 4 or 5 years previously.
And I suppose we should explain what Necropolis is about now.
Yes.
Are we actually going to talk about some of these stories instead of just
yes.
mentioning by name and assuming everyone knows what we're talking about?
Yes, okay.
That's a novel idea, Bob.
I was trying to work it in there, but...
I mean, I feel like, should we maybe even skip back to America a bit, just because that is sort of more part of Democracy?
Yes, it is.
Because I feel like that's, and again, this is me saying this, not being the guy who knows everything about Judge Dredd, but that's kind of like the core pillar of Democracy a bit, isn't it?
Yes.
It's where it all starts.
It's following this, well, it's actually, it's told from the perspective of Bennett Beanie, a comedian, basically telling the story of the girl he's been in love with ever since he was a kid, called America Jana, who is the daughter of a Puerto Rican immigrant to Mega City One, and just kind of her growing up in the system, realizing how much the totalitarian government of Mega City One is just fundamentally against this idea of like liberty and freedom for all in the American dream. And just as she goes slowly more disillusioned, eventually becoming a full-blown terrorist. It's a bit of a sad one, to be honest.
Yeah,
it is. I mean, there aren't many happy ones, to be fair.
But that's the nature of Mega City 1 when you get right down to it. I always found it funny that when Pratchett once explained the city of Ankh-Morpork Park was the city of like of like 500,000 souls and almost twice as many people. And I always thought that was a perfect description of Mega City 1 in a way. It's a city of a certain number of souls, but there's so many more people live there. It's just most of them aren't very nice.
Yeah, but and I think it's interesting because in America, Judge Dredd is just kind of flat out the villain of the story.
Yeah.
Like, he is the oppressive jackheel of the regime that America, and eventually Benny as well to an extent, are fighting against. And I think there's like one of the lines in it is like, the price of justice is freedom. And I think that kind of sums up the entirety of Judge Dredd a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it does. We're talking about a storyline that comes up some sort of 12 years into the life of Judge Dredd. And for a storyline to take you to a place where you're effectively saying to your audience, hey, your hero, guess what? He's actually the villain.
Yeah.
It's quite a brave move.
Well, I mean... it's one of the things that I've always respected about Judge Dredd as a character, and about just the whole series of Dredd stories, is that it wasn't ever afraid to pull its punches. Apocalypse War and Necropolis were examples of that.
Mm.
Yeah, and I think the other thing with America is what might be a bit of a theme for this episode. Got some absolutely stunning art in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's Colin McNeil on that one.
Yeah, and some of the covers that accompanied that original run were stunning as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it really kind of captures the feel of Mega City 1 as being... I think it's basically, if you watch any movie from the 80s set in New York and times that by about 150, that's Mega City 1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just this awful, scummy, everyone's piled on top of each other, living basically like Rat's Nightmare.
Yeah,
but I've got a theory as to why they have all these big stories. And I think it's because, if you think about the way that all the blocks are named, they're all named after people and celebrities and stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's just that they need a storyline that levels most of the city so that they can rebuild new city blocks with more relevant names to the current audience.
That might be it.
All right. It.
It's basically Mega City 1's version of recycling.
Yeah.
Okay, so, like, in a few years' time, is there going to be a Judge Dredd story set in Kylie Jenner block?
Almost certainly. Oh, I mean, I was reading a story a few weeks ago, and there was a Sue Perkins block.
What?
Hello, you know,
Sue is Perkins... it twinned with the historic Mel Gedrich block?
It didn't go on to say that. It was just seen in the background during a.
Does Sue Perkins know about this? Because I think she'd be over the moon.
Anyway, since we're talking about catastrophic stories that involve the levelling of Mega City 1.
Yeah.
Necropolis.
Yes.
Yes. We like Necropolis. Yeah, this,
we do. Necropolis was actually the first kind of big Judge Dredd story I read. Like, I think I'd read a few issues here and there.
Yeah.
But like the kind of trade paperback of that was the first one. I remember, oh, I like this Judge Dredd.
And then you went and read American and went, oh no, he's the villain.
I feel so disillusioned.
But then you read Judgment on Gotham and balance was restored because you went, I don't care.
Yeah, to be fair. Actually, I was going to mention as well, I think like the end point of the thing about the humour is Judge Death getting sprayed in the face by Scarecrow's fear gas, and suddenly he's just seen like pink unicorns.
Exactly,
everywhere.
It was brilliant.
And cuddly toys.
It was one of the most wonderful things I've seen in a comic.
But yeah, Necropolis is so good though, because that's basically Judge Death finally getting what he wants, like just full control of Mega City 1. And like the whole point of his existence is he believes that the root cause of crime is life itself. Therefore, life should be made illegal. And so he's just going to wipe out the entirety of Mega City 1.
Yeah.
With a little help from his friends.
Yeah, he'll get by with a little help from his friends.
And yeah. Just to update listeners on who that Fab Four are, it's Death.
Yeah.
Who is the front man. On bass, we've got Judge Fire. On lead guitar, Judge Fear. And keeping the tempo with his rocking beats is Judge Mortis.
Which I like. I like how three of them like are a bit abstract. Like you've got Death, Fear, Mortis, and then Fire, who's just a bloke that's on fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And together they are the Dark Judges, which is a great name for a rock band.
It is.
And possibly even the reason why they exist in the first place. Maybe Grant and Wagner were just sitting there, just going, you know. Well,
they've also got a few, you know, they could do a whole album where they feat other people, yeah. Like Kraken and yep. Sister Despair.
Yeah.
And Judge Ossify.
Yes. These are the special guests when they're on tour, isn't it?
And then they do like a collaboration with Drake, but it's actually just Judge Death, but he needs a new body. But yeah, I think like of the other three, Judge Fear is probably my favourite one. I just love that he's got like the big long cloak and his shoulder pads are bear traps.
Yes.
And like any good rock band, there's clearly been some infighting because you've also got, as a temporary member, Judge Silence, a mute dark judge that had his eyes and ears burnt away by Judge Fire.
See, oh.
Just think before that he was Judge Annoyingly Loud.
Judge in your face all the time.
I don't know if they've done this, but they probably have. And I so wish they have, but just dread meeting Judge Silence saying, hello, darkness, my old friend. I would love to see that as a panel.
I mean, you know, to be fair.
That's why I said I don't know if they've done it already. They probably have. I don't know.
But to be fair to the Dark Judges, it's not all their fault. You know.
You're not going to go on about nature versus nurture, are you?
Well, you know, when you think about nature, coming from somewhere called Dead World.
Yeah.
It doesn't really give you the best start in life, does it?
Yeah, I guess when you are Sydney Death of Dead World, your options are a bit limited.
You're unlikely to become a unicorn trainer, are you?
Sydney Death and his good friend Jeffrey Mortis.
So that does also remind me, I think there's like one Marvel comedy comic where it's just a dentist whose name is Bob Von Doom.
I'm going to look for that.
Yeah, I think Necropolis is also interesting because apart from just being like this big, like horror epic of Judge Dredd, like blasting his way through hordes of zombies, that's also kind of the point where he's just fully like fed up with the system a bit.
Yeah.
I think by that point he's even like abandoned his job as a judge and kind of just come back for this. Is that correct?
He comes back later on because I think at the beginning he's not there. It's Kruger, isn't it? Who's, was it Kruger, his name?
I think Kraken, isn't it? The one who's like Judge Dredd's clone.
Yeah. Kraken, that's it.
Kraken's... Yeah, you've got Kraken, and there's a few of the older judges sort of hanging on, like Dolman and stuff like that there.
I think Judge Silver's still in charge, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, because Kraken is in the role of Dredd, because Dredd's basically quit.
Yeah, decided to just go hang out in the desert.
Yeah, with a horse with no name.
There's more than usual song references in this episode. But it's Judge Dredd. It kind of lends itself to album covers and just...
It does. I mean, you know, there'd be some stunning album art.
Yeah. I sat down to read Apocalypse Now and there was a song playing in my head, which was Russians by Sting, as I was reading the first part of Apocalypse War.
You did also call it Apocalypse Now there.
I know. It's such an easy mistake to make.
It is. Should we talk about Apocalypse War then?
Yeah, because there's not nice stuff happens in that.
That one, I think, that is also kind of the embodiment for me of the idea of, like, Judge Dredd, he's a bad guy.
Yeah.
But you need him because everything else is so much worse.
Dredd is basically a tiger in a den of wolves. He keeps the bad stuff away, even though he is the bad stuff. At that point, he was, anyway.
Yeah, exactly. He is. I think basically the idea is, like, he's so bad because this is the kind of, like, law enforcement you get in a world as profoundly terrible as that of Mega City 1.
Do you know, the Chinese have a fun saying, just talking about him as a tiger. Chinese have a fun saying, once you're riding the tiger, it's difficult to get off. Like, I had to think about that for a bit, and I thought, actually, yeah, they've got a point. And once you got Judge Dredd there, once you're riding on his back, you're not going to tell him to stop, are you?
Look, I want to talk about Apocalypse War, but just, tigers aren't that big, though. Like, they're not the size of a horse. You can't just hop on one.
Tigers are huge.
I mean, yeah, compared to, like, a house cat.
No, tigers are huge compared to humans.
They have got massive heads, mind.
Yeah, trust me, tigers are massive.
And anyway, Mick, why don't you listen on the details of Apocalypse War while I definitely don't Google human-tiger comparison?
So, occasionally, in their fevered cheese dreams, the leadership of Mega City 1's judge system occasionally decide that the best man for the job of doing delicate and sensitive negotiations with other cities in other political blocks, like East Meg 1, for example, is Judge Dredd. Which is odd, because anyone with any sense would know that the last person that you would send into any kind of negotiation situation would be Judge Dredd.
Yeah.
On the grounds that he doesn't negotiate.
No, he doesn't.
I think by the end of Apocalypse War, he's made a pretty strong case.
I mean, he's effective in so much as he's unlikely to back down.
Yeah.
But let's be honest, there's a difference between backing down and launching sufficient missiles to destroy an entire city.
Yeah.
Well, in his defense, they started it.
They did start it.
Yeah, they did start it. But I mean, Apocalypse War is one of those stories where anyone who kind of grew up in the shadow of the Cold War, it's a little bit of uncomfortable reading.
So essentially then, the idea is that in an attempt to undermine Mega City 1, East Meg 1 have snuck in a plague of sorts that sends the inhabitants of Mega City 1 absolutely mental, more mental than they are normally.
Yeah.
Yes, everyone gets a bad case of block mania.
Indeed. There are fights in car parks. There are blocks aiming weapons of mass destruction at each other. The city defense forces that look after individual city blocks are railing against the judges. The judges are spread really thin, trying to keep order. Some of the judges are, of course, contaminated by the virus as well. And it's all led by East Meg Assassin Orlok.
See, the way you've described it and just the storyline of Blockmania, do you remember that film High Rise?
No.
It was set in like a tower block, supposed to be like a tower block of the future, and everyone starts going slowly mad in there.
Right.
Blockmania, I know it's like a Ray Bradbury story, but Blockmania reminded me of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, I found quite interesting about Blockmania is, for a lot of it, you think it's just another Judge Dredd story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you've no idea it's leading... I mean, obviously, in retrospect, you know, but at the time, you've no idea it's leading into, like, this massive, like, 20-odd part event.
Well, they did have a season break for the two-part finale.
Yeah.
So Blockmania devastated and left Mega City 1 reeling, and they had to try and negotiate something to get back on their feet. They find out that East Meg 1 is behind it, and they can't do anything about it. There's a dimensional force field that, and this is one of those ridiculous things in Judge Dredd, but when you're reading it within the context of Judge Dredd, you go, okay, yeah, right. The Soviet Mega City 1, East Meg 1,
yeah,
is defended by a dimensional force field that sends all incoming nukes to another Earth.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. And it's like a really happy utopian Earth, isn't it?
Yeah. But Dredd somehow manages to capture a Soviet missile bunker and ends up launching a nuclear strike against East Meg 1 and destroying it, which sows the seeds for revenge story after revenge story after revenge story.
Yep.
And Orlok the Assassin has more comebacks than the Who.
Yeah.
It has to be said.
I was going over a few of his comebacks in my head. Yeah.
I can't believe how much of a through line these rock references have been.
I've got to say, in a couple of his comebacks, he does look a bit like Robert Plant.
The thing is, right? If you go through a period of reading a lot of Judge Dredd sequentially, like I did when I got the Mega Collection,
You'll go mad.
No.
You'll start believing you are the law.
I am the law.
I am the law.
I'm not above the law. I am the law. So, Yeah, so you actually get, once you go through some of these longer storylines, and you've got a character like Orlok the Assassin who keeps cropping up in these storylines, you get to the point where if it's a story that's got any kind of mystery element to it, about suspecting it might be this person or that person, you're going, I bet that guy in that penthouse that keeps watching what they're doing, I bet it's Orlok.
Yeah.
I bet...
I'd love it if the characters get to that point as well.
Yeah. Well, again,
so that everybody turns around to Dredd during a meeting and goes, are you sure it's not Orlok?
The bizarre thing is, haven't they done that a couple of times as well?
There have been a couple of times when, are we sure Orlok's dead?
Yeah. Where they just kind of go, are you sure you killed him? You're absolutely positive. You check the body and everything, yeah?
Yeah.
Which I don't understand, Dredd. You're usually so good at killing people.
I don't know. Maybe this is Dredd's method of conservation, you know, catch and release.
And the other thing that I like about Judge Dredd is that every now and then they'll do a storyline where they focus on the fact that, well, if you assume that he was 30 when he left the Judge's Academy,
yeah,
he's now sort of 72. He's had more limbs broken than the human body actually contains. He's been burnt. He's been subjected to nuclear radiation. He barely sleeps. And yet he's still going.
Because, again, slab of meat in a helmet.
Indeed.
Just off in the corner, you got Batman going, no one mentions me when they talk about that. That's all happened to me. I even had my back broken.
Yeah, but there was a period in the 90s where he had 27 abs.
Yep. Oh, I remember the glorious pictures of Superman with his abs that went all the way up to, like, his armpits.
Is that like the male equivalent of kind of legs that ran all the way down the street?
Yes. And it's like they couldn't stop drawing curves under, you know the bit where the male body kind of goes into a kind of a Y shape under the armpits on built men, right? They couldn't stop putting muscles there for some reason.
So, yeah, so apart from these long, dark and depressing storylines, there are occasionally ones that are completely Fruit Loop, like The Day the Law Died.
Yeah.
Oh, is that the one with Judge Cal? Yeah.
Judge Cal, who runs Mega City 1 like he's a new version of Caligula.
And makes his goldfish the second in charge.
Yes, it's just...
You remember that Brooklyn Nine-Nine episode where they have, like, the happy-go-lucky captain? Who takes over.
Yeah.
It's a bit like that, isn't it?
And that introduces the alien Klegs, who are just a sort of reptilian version of Reapers.
See, by their name, I thought they would be kind of mostly see-through and quite useless and inefficient.
And also lie to students a lot.
We've made it political again.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of difficult not to when you're talking about Dredd.
Oh, I mean,
yeah, considering the whole point of the book is that it started as like a satire of Margaret Thatcher's policies.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think that's one of the great things about Judge Dredd, the comics, the character, the whole setting of Mega City 1, just the level of writing in it over the years. It's reflected the changing times. It's reflected this weird zeitgeist that they seem to be in tune with, that you don't really see until it becomes really big on social media, but they have it before then.
They also have lines like, gaze into the face of fear, gaze into the fist of dread.
Yes, which, you know, is still probably one of the best lines I've read in a comic book. do you remember I know I mentioned the Stallone film, but I'm going to have to be on Dredd. Was it Carl Urban? The main role?
It was Carl Urban.
Yeah.
You mean the Superior film?
The Superior film, which a lot of people were saying is basically The Raid, and I'm saying, well, no, they're two very different films. They just happen to have a similar setting, but they are fundamentally two very different films, right? Yeah.
Also, much more importantly, The Raid is great. What's wrong with having another The Raid? Every movie should just be The Raid.
Harry Potter, The Raid. I would see that.
I mean, I would watch that over any of the other Harry Potter films now.
Harry Potter, The Raid of the Philosopher's Stone, where a young boy of primary school age beats the crap out of everyone in order to get the Philosopher's Stone. But yeah, the movie Dread, Carl Urban, aside from killing it as in the role of Dread, and I use that term quite literally, I thought the setting, you know, they got the block right. You know, they got the whole idea of the megacity block.
Yeah.
I think they nailed it just with how squalid and just how crowded, but also how empty it was at the same time.
Yeah, true enough.
And that there were some good people in there, but, you know, it was few and far between.
Indeed. Also, you know what I would say as the massive cop-out to end the show?
What?
Is that, first of all, we should probably wait for the ice cream van to stop.
No, it's staying in. It's totally staying in.
It's my signature move.
Well, what I would actually say, though, is that if you want to read a Judge Dredd story, you can pretty much start with any of them.
Yeah.
Like, as much as there is this massive, long-running continuity, I think most of the, certainly the shorter ones, are just written with the edit that you can just pick them up, read them in any order you want.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean,
I think that the beauty of it is that the world sprawls so much that there's a little corner of the Judge Dredd universe that will appear to anyone. I mean, if you like your villains to be slightly surreal, you can't go far wrong with PJ Maybe.
Yeah.
The serial killer.
I quite like Judgment Day, the one with Johnny Alpha.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, is PJ Maybe the one that Carly Rae Jepsen song is about?
Yes. I mean, just to show you how whimsical PJ Maybe's plots are, his last appearance was in 2016. In a storyline about him cross-dressing to conceal his identity, but still ending up being killed by Dredd.
Yeah. There's an audio play that finishes off the Judgment Day story with was Toby Longworth and Simon Pegg. Simon Pegg plays Johnny Alpha, and he's great.
I mean, again, Simon Pegg is not probably who would spring to my mind as Johnny Alpha.
For an audio play, he really works. You know, if it was like a live-action film, then no.
Well, no, fair play to him then.
It's in the same way that you think Mark Hamill should not work as the Joker, but when you close your eyes and you listen to his voice as the Joker.
I don't know. See, I feel like also, like, that's sure 70s, like, sweet-faced apple pie Luke Skywalker Mark Hamill. But, like, as he's got older, Mark Hamill's just become more and more looking like a guy who could play the Joker.
He's basically a grizzled old man on his lawn with a shotgun. Sorry, on his front porch with a shotgun.
Yeah. Last Jedi Mark Hamill, I can definitely see playing the Joker. And also drinking some kind of weird alien cow milk.
That's moonshine. He made it last night and is still in the back.
Anyway, I think more importantly, we've got to the end of our Judge Dredd stories.
Yeah. There's a whole horse you can pick from. For me, I would recommend Judgment on Gotham as an entry point.
Yes. Agreed.
And I'd recommend do what you want. I'm not your mother.
Well, no, that's because we're all clones.
Well, I don't know who the original template was, but someone's gone very wrong down the line. Anyway, I think...
In the future... The police force of Mega City 1 will not be based on our clone blueprints.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I think that brings us to the end of the show. If you have enjoyed listening to us ramble about Judge Dredd for an hour, you can find more of us at thegeekshow.co.uk or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you do want to get in contact with us, you can find us online just at thegeekshow on the Twitters. And also, if you do want to help us out, you can donate to our Patreon, or maybe just consider leaving us a review on iTunes or your podcast app of choice. So, until next time, I've been Andrew.
I've been Rob.
And I've been Mick.
And we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. Right. Okay. I know tigers are big, but the point is they're not that tall. I've seen pictures of the people on them, and it's the most awkward. You have to like hitch your legs up. Why would you do that, Rob? Just ride a horse. Ride a horse, ancient Chinese proverbs.
Yeah, but I mean, some Chinese people, they are smaller stature. So to them, maybe a tiger is something that is more of a rideable size.
I mean, they're short. They're not like 3.5 feet tall.
I'm not saying they're hobbits.
I mean, you know, height's overrated, isn't it?
And I suppose it does depend on the size of the tiger. I mean, if it's one of those weird tigers that's kind of grown to like 1.5 times the size of a normal tiger, which does happen. Yeah, I can kind of understand. They look at it and go, is that a fully grown one? So this one's quite young.
If the point we've arrived at is that if you had a freakishly large animal, a freakishly small person could ride it.
Also.
Yes.
Also, 3'4" isn't that freakishly short. It's about the size of a Harrison Ford.
All I'm saying is that somebody who's about 5'3", not 3'4", about 5'3", 5'4", maybe my mum's height, it's more that she would be able to ride a tiger properly. I maybe would struggle with it.
No, because it's clear that we've had measurements all wrong, because Harrison Ford is about 4'3".
What?
Harrison Ford is about 4'3".
No.
That's not right.
No.
Right. You watch.
I'm Googling this.
Right. You watch Raiders of the Lost Ark. They clearly state that the staff is exactly 5 foot tall.
His official height is 1.85 metres. He's basically like 5'10", 5'11". He's not 4'3".
He's not a full staff in height.
Neither was that movie. I mean,
he's a headpiece short of a full staff.
Ever since I had the plot explained to me, because I always thought when I was growing up, oh, it's such a great film. And then someone pointed out, yeah, you do know that he doesn't actually do anything in the film. Like, yeah, but he fights off the Nazis and he does this, and he does that. It's like, no, yeah, but he's...
Actually, what he does is he slows the whole process down.
Exactly. And he's just there to pick it up after everyone dies. That's it. I was like, I was thought about the plot. I was like, damn. So... all his actions had no point whatsoever. He went to all that trouble for nothing at all.
Yeah, because what...
I mean, he got the girl.
Well, that's problematic as well, isn't it?
Because he didn't actually get the girl until many, many years later, when Sheila B.
I don't know what you're talking about, Rob. He got the girl at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Then where was she?
And then that was the last time we saw Marion.